Hey guys, this is your host, Michael Terrazas. Thank you for listening to the Underdog Sports Podcast. If you are a Colts fan, be sure to subscribe to my podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. My podcast is available on all platforms. Also, follow me on Twitter at Underdog Sports4, Facebook Underdog Sports Podcast. I hope you guys have a great day. Stay blessed and go Colts. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Underdog Sports Podcast, guys. I am your host, Michael Terrazas, back at it again with another show. I really hope you guys are staying safe out there. Hope you guys are staying blessed. I know some stuff is opening back up. I'm not too sure about Indianapolis and other places where you might be listening from. But here in Texas, I know some things are still opening up, gyms and all that stuff. That gyms, they haven't opened up yet. But my barbershop opened up, and it was definitely a need to get this haircut in, so I don't look like a troll anymore. But in the meantime, guys, I just hope you guys are staying blessed. In today's show, it's going to be a good one. We're going to start a segment, you know, talking about the schedule, you know, talking about the predictions for 2020, way too early predictions. And then I'm also going to be talking about a player in Zach Pascal and how he can, you know, how he can develop and how far he's come. Also, I'm going to have a very special guest on the show, Kevin Bowen. If you're not familiar with Kevin Bowen, then guys, y'all need to get familiar with him. He is a great guy, a great Colts reporter. He is very insightful. So I'm going to have him on the show here in a little bit, so you'll definitely need to stay here and listen to that, okay? So getting started here, well, I'm going to start with Zach Pascal. I love me some Zach Pascal. Undrafted free agent, he made the roster. His rookie year, he didn't do too much stuff. You know, he wasn't that polished. He still had a lot of work to be done, but he had Andrew Luck at his quarterback. He threw him open a few times, and he definitely made some good catches. And then, you know, when you're looking at the whole body of work, in 2018, it's, you know, I almost didn't even recognize Zach Pascal, if I'm being honest with you. You know, I was more into T.Y. Hilton. I was more into, you know, guys like him. I didn't spend too much time. But in 2018, he did have 27 receptions, 268 yards. About, he averaged 9.9, you can say 10 yards a catch. His longest was 28, and he had two touchdowns. That was with Andrew Luck, you know. You had guys, you know, you had a T.Y. Hilton, a Chester Rogers. You were still battling some, I guess you could say, some wide receiver depth issues. And then 2019 comes, and you see a pretty good production, a boost in production here. 41 receptions, so not all that much higher than in 2018 to 27. 41 receptions, 607 receiving yards, 14.8 yards per catch in 5 touchdowns. That just speaks to how hard he worked. And I definitely saw last year the difference between 2018, 2019. I saw more aggressiveness. I saw more polished route running. I saw he took more of a leadership and responsibility and a higher role. This year, with all the injuries, Zach Pascal was left as our number one receiver. You know, you had the Devin Funches, you had T.Y. Hilton, you had Paris Campbell, but injuries hit all of those guys, and Zach Pascal was left as the number one guy. In some games, you know, he actually showed out. He showed out big time. I believe against the Texans, he had like 110 receiving yards. And that was a big game, the first game at home. With Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, Zach Pascal, I'm really proud of how Zach Pascal played in 2020. He definitely earned his spot. He showed confidence. His hands looked like they got better. He was catching with his hands more this year. I noticed that. In 2018, he was more catching with his body. But in 2019, I saw more for sure hands. Okay, I want to spread a lot of love here, okay? Over the course of this offseason, you know, depending on where this season is going to go or facility is going to open back up, I want to spread love around the whole roster. And I'm starting with Zach Pascal because, man, he has developed himself into a nice, fine, young receiver. Moving forward, it looks a little positive. T.Y. Hilton, Michael Pittman Jr., Paris Campbell, Desmond Patman, Reese Fountain, Marcus Johnson, Zach Pascal. There's some competition at the receiver position. So in training camp, preseason, there's going to be a lot of competition. And I'm intrigued to see how it turns out, how it unfolds. Because Marcus Johnson is a good receiver too. I'm actually pretty high on rookie Desmond Patman. Reese Fountain, I love him. Going into 2020, in training camp, you're going to have Jacob Eason, Jacoby Brissett, Phillip Rivers throwing you the football. Depending on how many receivers the Colts carry into the 53-man roster, I honestly think it's going to be like last year. You're going to carry six. Can he make the roster? Whether they take five or whether they take six. I definitely like his chances. I definitely like his shot. I love his chances to make the roster. Right now, on paper, you can say he's either the number four or the number three receiver on this team, whether you want to put him behind or in front of Paris Campbell. I think Michael Pittman Jr. coming in, he has to be an immediate big-time player. He has the potential. He has the playmaking ability. I love me some Michael Pittman Jr. Also, he has a YouTube channel, which I don't know if any of you guys knew that, but he has a YouTube channel, a vlog. You know, it's pretty interesting. He takes you through the time of, you know, going to the combine, college football awards, getting drafted by the Colts, you know, all that is there. So I'm actually giving some Michael Pittman some love. So make sure to go check that out. Zach Pascal, I believe, will make this roster. What are the expectations for him? Guys, I might be giving him too much love. I don't know. But I definitely love the possibility of him becoming a future number three or number two receiver for this Colts team. You know, when T.Y. Hilton decides to hang him up, if he outshines Paris Campbell, you know, I see his body of work getting better. You know, I think he can be a little bit more aggressive. He's got to work on creating more separation. He's a good route runner. He has that down for him. But I think the biggest thing is going to be creating separation, being more aggressive. He is a good run blocker too. Don't forget about that. He is a good run blocker. Zach Pascal is still before our eyes developing in a good way. He's developing, and so far through 2 years, he has made a jump. So in 2020, he needs to make an even bigger jump because I don't know how much this offense is going to pass. If I had this offensive line and Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor in the backfield, hell, I probably wouldn't even pass either. You still got Jordan Wilkins. Nyheim Hines, you still have him. Most of the time he works out of the slot, but he's still a good running back. So all of that, I'm really pulling for Zach Pascal. I really am. Getting into the 2020 Colts schedule. Now, let me tell you this, guys. I was not happy with this. I was anticipating two or three primetime games. And I'm going to say this. I don't consider Thursday night a primetime game. That's not primetime. It's on a short week. You're most likely playing a division opponent. You're most likely going to play on the road. everyone gets a Thursday night game. So I don't consider that a primetime game. I don't. That's just me. But Colts do not get a primetime game. They have the Thursday night game and everything else, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock Eastern time. That's basically how it is. Week one, you're facing Jacksonville in Jacksonville. Now, Frank Reich even said it. They've had a hard time playing in Jacksonville. For whatever reason, so far, 2 years into Frank Reich's tenure, they've lost in Jacksonville. Definitely got to turn the tide on that. You know, that's going to be where Kalyvon Chasen is going to be. C.J. Henderson on that defense. Laviska Shenault, the wide receiver the Jaguars took. So that's going to be a big-time division game to kick off 2020. Big time. Got to go out and win. Week two, you're going against the Minnesota Vikings in your home opener. That's going to be a very intriguing game. Kirk Cousins, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, that offensive line, Dalvin Cook. You got the defense. They just added Jeff Gladney, my guy from TCU. Love me some Jeff Gladney. That's going to be a big-time game. NFC opponent. Week three, you got the Jets. I mean, the Jets, for some reason, have always been a tricky game. I have no idea why. Sam Darnold and company, they're going to be itching to get better. They are definitely going to try and get better. They have Pierre Desir now, almost all of 2017 Colts defense. They have them there now. Week four, you're in Chicago. Thankfully, it's not in November. It's October 4th. So thankfully, it's not going to be a blizzard when you play the Bears. Obviously, you know, that Super Bowl rematch and everything. Week five, you're going to be in Cleveland. Big time game. Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, Baker Mayfield going up against those boys. Then you look at the defense. You know, you got Denzel Ward, Greedy Williams, Miles Garrett. Week six, you got Joe Burrow coming to town. That should be, in my opinion, a win. At Detroit, that's going to be intriguing. Matthew Stafford, he never shies away from putting points on Indy. He never shies away from that. Week nine is probably the biggest game on the schedule so far to Colts fans. The Baltimore Ravens are coming to town. Week nine. It's going to be a big-time game scheduled for 1 o'clock. Week 10, this is going to be the Thursday night game. You're at Tennessee. They just made the AFC Championship game. I love me some Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel is a really good coach. So that's going to be a short week. Right after Baltimore, too. You're going on a short week to a division opponent, which is most likely going to be a big-time game. Week 11, you're going to be playing the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, I don't know who we're going to face. But all I know is that Devontae Adams is that guy. Defense got a little better. They still got that pass rush, Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. This is an intriguing part of this schedule. Because from week 12 to week 17, the Colts are playing all AFC opponents. Six games, all AFC. Four of those games are division opponents. Week 12, you're playing the Tennessee Titans. At home. Week 13, you're going to be at Houston. So you got two huge back-to-back division games. Week 14, you're going to Las Vegas. That beautiful stadium the Raiders are building. that's a game you lost in 2019. You let a game slip away from you. You pissed that game away. Got to go to Las Vegas and get revenge. Week 15, you're facing Houston again. You're facing Houston again at home. So in 3 weeks, you face the Titans twice. In 3 weeks, you're facing Houston twice. Week 16, you're going to be at Pittsburgh. I don't know why. We're always at Pittsburgh. It seems like we haven't had a home game against Pittsburgh in a long time. And I know the last one was in 2017. Like, man, we are always in Pittsburgh. Always. Ben Roethlisberger, Juju Smith-Schuster, Denzel Washington. You got that good defense. Minka Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, Bud Dupree. You got all those guys. You got all those guys. Then you close the season against Jacksonville. You open the season against Jacksonville. Now you're closing against Jacksonville. This stretch from week 12 to week 17 will decide. I'm calling it right now. That stretch right there will decide if the Colts win the division and if they go to the playoffs. If you're asking me, that is a ridiculous schedule the NFL put together. That is a horrible schedule. I don't know what is it, though. I don't know what the league has against the Colts. Is it Jim Irsay? Do you not like blue? Do you not like horses or what? But that is going to be a pivotal stretch. Now, my predictions for this season. Look, I want to say they have an easy schedule. I want to say they should go 13-3, 12-4. But guys, right now, that's just not the case. We know our Colts. They play down to their opponent. If they're playing it like Kansas City, they went to Kansas City and completely dominated them and beat them. You face Miami Dolphins and you lose? You can't even get a touchdown against them. I don't care if Brian Hoyer was at under center. You couldn't move the ball against them. You could have run the ball on them. You couldn't do anything. You lost to the Raiders, the Dolphins. You shouldn't lose those games. I know it's the offseason. It's not time to get hyped, but even thinking about it right now is getting me hyped. Getting a little irritated, if I'm being honest with you. But I just feel like in one of these must-win games, in one of these easy pencil-in games, they're going to lose. You know, are they going to drop that week one game against Jacksonville? I don't know. But my predictions for this season, right now, guys, I'm going to go 9-7. I'm going to go 9-7. I can't do 10-6. I can't do 11-5. I can't do 12-4. I can't do that. I just can't. I want to so bad, but the Colts have to prove it. They have to prove it. They have to show me something. I can't just look on paper and say, oh, wow, you look good. You're going to be good. I can't do that anymore. The Colts have, you know, let me down. They've let us down in the past. They've dropped games that they should have never dropped in the first place. And they got to break that mold. They have to. They have to break it. 9-7 is what I'm giving them, guys, for the 2020 season. Now, who are those losses going to be? I'm actually going to name them right now. I'm going to go ahead and say they dropped the week one game against Jacksonville. They will lose in Chicago. They will lose at Cleveland. They will lose against Baltimore. I'll say they'll lose that Thursday night game against Tennessee. They'll lose at Houston. And I'm going to say they lose at Pittsburgh. Some pretty big games that they're going to lose. So that's my prediction right now, guys. You know, I just need to see the Colts prove it. I got to see them prove it. They have to come into the season strong. Health is going to be big. They have to be healthy. And, you know, 2020 is looking pretty intriguing right now with that schedule and with everything going on. So that's my prediction for 2020, guys. 9-7. I'm sorry I couldn't get it higher. I just couldn't bring myself to it. I just couldn't. I can't look at these games and say, oh, they're going to win that one. Oh, they're going to win that one. Knowing full well that the Colts have dropped so many games in the past, not just in 2019, but in the past, that they should have won, that they just let slip away. This defense will be tested. They will need to close games out. They will have to. It's going to be tested. So that's going to do it for this segment, guys. When we come back, I'm going to have Kevin Bowen on the show. We're going to be talking about Malik Hooker. We're going to be talking about Phillip Rivers. We're going to be talking about DeForest Buckner. All that good stuff. Stay tuned right after this break. Welcome back to the show, guys. With me joined on the show right here is a very special guest. If you haven't already followed him, you're probably doing it all wrong. Kevin Bowen from Kevin's Corner, reporter for the Colts. How you doing, Kev?
I appreciate that, Michael. I'm hanging in there. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. You know, just staying blessed, staying healthy, just trying to stay indoors as much as possible.
Right. That's kind of, that is certainly how we go about our business now on a 24/7 basis, it seems like. But hopefully we can give people a little bit of break from the chaos.
Definitely. I mean, I know these Colts players definitely want to take a break from all this. I know they're itching to get back in the facility, you know, get with one another, get in the offseason program. These coaches definitely want to get their hands on these rookies. So coming into this situation, you know, coming out of the draft class, there were so many questions and, you know, there were so many positive thoughts, maybe some questions. And one question I actually have is, first off, the Malik Hooker. Declining his option is a little, you know, I guess you could say the fan base is on both sides of it. They're with the decision, but then they're against it. And then you look at Chris Ballard speaking highly of Julian Blackmon, and then also declining. Where do you think the Colts were on drafting Julian Blackmon while also declining Malik Hooker's fifth-year option?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was very telling. You know, Chris Ballard said after the draft, or I guess during the draft, of, you know, I think Julian Blackmon is a legit free safety in the league. And when I heard that, that was about 72 hours before the deadline was for the Malik Hooker contract extension, or I should say team option. I was like, oh boy, this isn't good for Hooker. And so, yes, I do think there's a direct correlation between that draft pick. And that was kind of the debate. You know, people were like, you know, in the second round, do you take, you know, Xavier McKinney if he's there? Do you take, I'm trying to get other guys, Jeremy Chinn, who was on the board? You know, some of those guys, is like, if they take a safety early, again, it's actions speak louder than words. It's like the whole Jacoby Brissett thing. Well, they can say that they love him, but then they go out and get Phillip Rivers and pay him $25 million. So, again, it comes down to the actions. And I was very surprised by it. I mean, for those of that have listened to my podcast or certainly read my work, I mean, I've been pretty outspoken about my disagreement with that decision. And I am not sitting here saying at all Malik Hooker is your unquestioned long term, he deserves a 5-year extension, you know, next offseason sort of thing. I look at it as a very manageable contract that you would give that team option to him, extend him through the 2021 season. And that is, again, a very affordable $6.7 million deal, which is kind of middle of the pack for free safeties. You can evaluate him for another year, and then you can ease Julian Blackmon on. And to me, this is where I kind of don't see 100%. The Colts thinking, they have talked about Malik Hooker coming off the ACL and, you know, his inability to stay healthy and things like that. But yet they're betting on a guy who is coming off the ACL, who is a rookie in Julian Blackmon. I think you're in a cap situation where you can get the best of both worlds. That is, pick up the team option on Hooker, That would have brought him, again, two more seasons of evaluation under a very reasonable deal. And at the same time, you can slowly bring Julian Blackman along. And then after the 2021 season, that's when you can make a final decision on Hooker. So that's where my disagreement comes from it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was talking about this the other day, and, you know, I did not eliminate the possibility of Malik Hooker getting traded next year midseason. I mean, it just depends to me where Julian Blackman is in his recovery. Does he start the year on PUP? Is Malik Hooker not playing that great? I know Chris Ballard also loves himself some George Odom, too. He always speaks highly of him. So that's definitely an interesting element to all this. Just one more question on Hooker. Do you see him getting traded? Do you see him that as a possibility?
Well, you know, I think if you go back to last Monday and when that contract or the exercise option deadline was due, I mean, the Colts waited, I believe, the longest of any team in the NFL to either exercise it or decline it. And I think that was because you're looking at potential trade offers. You are you're looking into all of that. Now, having said that, if you're going to trade him, I mean, like you said, George Odom is probably your day one starter. I mean, that would be George Odom and Kari Willis starting together as you do, you know, kind of slowly bring Julian Blackman along with him, you know, maybe not being ready till October or some point during the 2020 season. So, I mean, I think the Colts have showed their hand to the entire NFL and what they think of Malik Hooker now. So, I mean, maybe you would move him, but again, that really thins kind of your safety depth. Hooker's still got to be pretty motivated this year, you know, because this is the final year of his contract. So I still think you're going to get a highly motivated player, or you should. And in today's NFL, you need multiple defensive backs, especially safeties in this league. And with Blackman not being day one ready, I think there is a need for him on this 2020 roster. So part of me thinks that maybe the trade value has lessened big time and just you've lost a little bit of your leverage. And I'll be really, really curious and plugged in to see how all this plays out.
Definitely, definitely. You know, the secondary is like, it has a couple of questions. We're about to talk about a guy who should help the secondary. Trading for DeForest Buckner has got to be the one highlight of the offseason if we have to choose one. Because this whole time everybody was discussing, you know, oh, we should take a quarterback at 13. We should take Javon Kinlaw. We should go for a wide receiver if they're available. And it came out that Chris Ballard was working on this trade from around the time of the Super Bowl. And it, you know, Chris Ballard has one of the most tight-lipped teams in all of the NFL. And it definitely caught us off guard when he traded for DeForest Buckner. And Matt Eberflus has spoken highly of him. He wants him to be the engine that drives this offense. Chris Ballard, you know, saying at the end of the year, what they needed, a dominant three tech, they traded for DeForest Buckner. That he is a dominant three tech. How much are they betting on DeForest Buckner to be a game changer? And where are you at with him being a possible game changer? Because you're getting an all-pro talent. Where do you think
you are?
Yeah. DeForest Buckner can take this defense?
Yeah, I mean, he needs to be an all-pro player. When you trade away the 13th overall pick and do it, you know, well before the draft starts, that's very rare. I mean, even if you look at some of the first-round picks that were traded last year, four guys around the league, you know, you're talking Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jalen Ramsey, Laremy Tunsil. I mean, those are all-pro caliber players, and that is where DeForest Buckner has got to get to his game too on a consistent basis. And I mean, he's very close. He's knocking on the door. He's 26 years old. He was an all-pro a couple of years ago. And now it's, you know, have, you know, very close to an Aaron Donald type next handful of seasons, because that's what the 13th pick means. I mean, it's just, I cannot stress enough, and I won't bore your listeners with some of the numbers behind it, but the Colts pulled off one of the more unique trades in NFL history, especially recent years, in giving up a top half of the first round pick for a defensive tackle. But it just goes to show you what they thought of their current defensive tackle group. You know, I told the story before where if you look at about week 7-ish of last season, the Colts had made three outside moves to their roster. So they had signed guys, you know, off the open market, whatever, claimed people off other teams and brought them onto their 53-man roster. All three of them played defensive tackle. Like, they were disappointed with that position group last year. And clearly this move shows you how disappointed they were. And in this defense, we talk about the Tampa Bay history in this defense. It's Warren Sapp, it's Derek Brooks, and it's a bit of Rondae Barber. John Lynch gets thrown in there. But those first three guys, it's that three-technique defensive tackle, it's your Will linebacker, and it's your nickel corner. Well, you've got Kenny Moore, you've got Darius Leonard, and now DeForest Buckner, you feel like can be that Warren Sapp type of guy for your defense. So an absolutely vital pickup. He checks so many of the Colts boxes. Again, to give up 13 overall is no joke for Chris Ballard. That dude doesn't give up draft capital just for anybody. So from a leadership standpoint, a work ethic standpoint, that's why the Colts felt like he was worthy of it. As some people would be like, well, this dude was this good. Why did San Francisco let him go? San Francisco was in a bad cap situation. They wanted to re-sign, I think, multiple people and not just one guy. And financially, they just couldn't make it work, considering Buckner wanted, over $20 million, and I guess in total, right around $100 million. And then also, they needed some draft picks, which, they were able to acquire that with a Garoppolo trade, giving up a pick, Manuel Sanders trade as well. So San Francisco basically said to DeForest Buckner's agent, find me a team that's going to give up a nice first-round pick in return. And they knew full well what that position and what that player meant to the Colts. And that's why that trade happened.
Definitely. If I'm being honest, I'm kind of surprised San Francisco didn't ask for another pick, because you're asking for if not the second most important position in football, a premier position in a trade. And the 13th overall pick, I'm surprised they didn't get a fourth rounder or anything like that out of us. So that was definitely good on the Colts' part. It turned into Jacob Eason. So to speak,
I will add
a little,
this, Michael, just I will add this about the Buckner trade and throwing in another pick and whatnot. I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe since 2000, there's been like three trades in the entire NFL, not on draft night. So how the Colts traded for Buckner, back in mid-March or something like that, that have been for opposing players. So again, giving up the top 15 pick is rare. And the only three times it's happened, it's been like Randy Moss, Jay Cutler. Like it hasn't been very frequent, and it's not for defensive tackle. So I think that just goes to show you, again, these sorts of trades don't happen very often. And while I think a lot of people look at it as like, this is a win-win for, really both sides of it, because San Francisco was afraid of losing Buckner to free agency. Like that was the risk. They got some return value on him, and then the Colts were able to give the extension to make sure he was kept from a long-term standpoint. So I do think this is a really, really rare trade.
Yeah, because I mean, it you said it right. It's a rare position because of the position the player is he's in and the type of player he is. Even listening to you on your show all these years, you've said one thing that has stuck to my mind. Premium pass rushers don't hit the open market. So you had to get one. You had to trade for one because you didn't know what you were going to get in Javon Kinlaw, who's still dealing with tendonitis. So that was good on San Francisco's part because they had horrible draft capital. I believe they didn't have their first pick until like the fourth round. So that was good on their part. Two more quick questions on the defense that I just want to add in here. Something that a lot of people really aren't talking about. First, where are the Colts with Anthony Walker? Because being drafted as a seventh round pick, not a lot was thought of him. But he has turned himself into a really good Mike linebacker. But then you have Bobby Okereke. This is a contract year for Anthony Walker. Is he a favorite to get signed or to get traded because of that depth you have with Bobby? Because I think he fits best with Darius Leonard, the size, the speed, the arm length. That could be your future Mike. And then at the defensive end position, Jabal Sheard's no longer here. I know everybody's favorite is Kamoko Toure to take over the position, but I am siding with Ben Banigou because I feel in this next upcoming year, he's going to be a more complete player. He is good in the pass rushing department, but I think what you also need is the ability to stop the run. I think Ben Banigou is stronger. I think he's better in that department. So that's why I'm opting to go with Ben Banigou. I love me some Kamoko too, right? No, he's the fastest edge rusher on the team. Where are you at with Anthony Walker and his upcoming contract year in the open defensive end spot?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with Walker. And I would say that this staff, Bobby Okereke would be in the top three or four players of people that this staff just loves and thinks has very high potential. And he started 8 games for you last year. I feel like they think they've got to get him on the field even more. And they really like Anthony Walker, and Darius Leonard really likes Anthony Walker. And that means something. And I just can't see, again, player trades in the NFL, they sound good, but like they just don't happen that much. So you don't have a whole lot of leverage with him in the end of his contract and things like that. And I mean, you are one injury away at linebacker from all of a sudden your depth being tested a little bit, and all of a sudden you need EJ Speed to really come on for you, something like that, if you were to move Anthony Walker. So I will be curious, though, to see what the rep looks like, dividing those reps up between Okereke and Walker, because Okereke, like you said, from an athleticism standpoint, the length and the wingspan and his speed, that fits more of the Leonard mold. Now, Anthony Walker, I think from an intelligence standpoint and being that Mike linebacker, has done a really solid job for this defense. So on paper, it would add up to like, all right, is he going to be here after this season? You know, I think that is a fair question. But I think for now, you like what you have at linebacker. There are times last year where you got all three of those guys on the field. Could you do that a little bit more on the early downs? I think that's something to look into. As far as replacing Jabal Sheard, I agree with you. And then I think Banigou has the down-the-road potential to be a more complete three-down player than Toure. Toure is by far the better, I think, third down rusher for you as a speed guy, and that needs to be on the field. But I don't even look at those two guys as starting. I think it'll be Danico Autry or Tyquan Lewis, to be honest with you, of kicking those guys outside at a position they've played before. They don't need to be your defensive tackles. You're going to start Grover Stewart and DeForest Buckner, and then Sheldon Day can be the top backup there. They can obviously help you out there if you need them to. But I think Lewis and Autry are our two guys that can play outside and really give you a formidable run group on early down. Now, let's say you have Autry out there. Autry, Stewart, Buckner, Justin Houston, that's a pretty good four-man group to me on the early downs. And then when you get into third down, that's when you can improvise a little bit where, okay, you take Stewart off the field, maybe you move Autry inside, or you bring Lewis inside, and then you bring Toure on the field at that end spot opposite Houston. Banigou certainly in the mix. We shouldn't forget about Al-Qadeen Muhammad, who I think at times gets overlooked. I think he's been a consistent player for this team. So there are some options there. You know, this is a big year, certainly, for Banigou. But I think the Colts have a couple of options with the versatile linemen that they can kind of mix and match well. But having said that, when you talk about the future of this defensive line, knowing that Sheard is gone, the age of Houston in a contract year, you know, the age of Autry, who's also in a contract year. You know, the guys like Banigou and Toure and Lewis, you drafted them in the second round for a reason. They need to come on because Terrell Basham was a miss. He came back the next year, drafted two defensive linemen in the second round. Then you drafted Banigou last year. You have to make sure that future can be built along with DeForest Buckner up front.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was okay with not addressing the defensive end position in free agency or the draft. I was okay with it because you invested a lot of draft capital in these guys, and it's time to play. It's time to get them on the field. It's time to get them out there and see what you got in them. I was okay with that. I know there was a lot of I guess you could say back and forth on whether they should have addressed the defensive end position, whether they shouldn't. I was okay with it because you just need to see what you have in these guys. Moving along here, the last bit of the segment here. Philip Rivers, you know, he's the new show guy in town. He was very attracted to Indianapolis when he looked at the overall talent of the offensive line. That's something he did not have in L.A., almost at San Diego. You know, when we look at this offensive line, they are going to protect Philip Rivers, okay? You got a lot of tough personalities on this offense. You got a Ryan Kelly. You got a Quentin Nelson. You have a Philip Rivers. Jonathan Taylor is coming on. You look at the talent of this offense. You got the 1-2 punch, Mac Taylor. You have Hilton. Hopefully he can get a little bit more healthier. Paris Campbell, Michael Pittman Jr., Zach Pascal, who I really like a lot. My simple question for you, Kevin, is this. In 2020, can Philip Rivers take the Colts to a Super Bowl?
No, I don't think that. Super Bowl to me is a little bit too extreme. But I think the Colts can win the division. Certainly, mm-hmm. I do. I look at Baltimore, Kansas City, and think they have a really solid foundation. And I thought Baltimore had a pretty good draft. Kansas City a little bit quieter of an off season, but I mean they're still a damn good football team. So I look at both of those teams as still the class of the AFC, and I'm gonna have to see the Colts prove it. And before I can go there. So, you know, Rivers, yes, there are reasons why the Colts made that move. And certainly I thought they needed to upgrade their passing offense. But there are questions, I think, around him as well of like, okay, can your offensive line stay healthy? That's a big if, you know, with how that depth looks. Is the wideout group going to be more consistent? Can Hilton stay healthy? Can Campbell stay healthy? Is Michael Pittman going to be that immediate contributor that I think he will be and so many people do as well? And then on the defensive side, is the cornerback group ready to take the next step? And I guess just the secondary in general. So, yeah, to go Super Bowl, I can't go there just yet, but I do think this is a better football team and should be better than they were last year as a 7-9 team.
Definitely. I mean, I want to jump on the Super Bowl so much, but I already said it after the draft on paper. I have to see the Colts prove it because they've dropped so many games, you know, playing down to their opponent. They played down to the Jets, the Raiders, the Dolphins. They have the talent. I just never know why they play down to their opponent. They have to come out and prove it. They have to. They have to come out, put their foot on people's throats, and finish games. That's the biggest thing. I mean, there were so many games that they should not have lost. The Raiders and the Dolphins game come to mind. Now, with Taylor, I can at least say that the Colts look like a prime candidate to be the league's number one rushing offense. Where are you at with the element and the dynamic of this rushing offense and the potential it can have in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we know full well what the mantra is for the Colts, and they feel like their explosive element to that run game needed another jolt. Marlon Mack has hit some big runs for them, but now when you go to Jonathan Taylor, he has that ability to do that as well, and you can kind of settle Nyheim Hines into more of that third down passing role. And, you know, I still think teams like Baltimore and Tennessee have showed, especially Tennessee last year, what it means to be an elite rushing attack, you know, something that I've really stressed throughout the offseason of Colts had a really good rushing attack last season. Very good, especially compared to recent seasons for them in Indianapolis. But when they played the best rushing defenses in the league, that group largely folded and just didn't produce anywhere near the level that you saw, you know, Tennessee produce at during their playoff run against elite rush defenses in Baltimore and New England. So I think that's the next step for the Colts is, you know, I go back to that divisional round loss, even in Kansas City from, you know, January 2019 of like, you felt like you had the ideal blueprint going into that game. You had just dominated Houston on the ground. You had ran the ball so well late in the 2018 season. Kansas City was the worst rush defense in the NFL. And you go in there and you get absolutely owned in the trenches early on in that game. And you can't establish Marlon Mack at all. And next thing you know, you're playing way behind the eight ball. So it's those types of environments those types of games, even though Kansas City's run defense wasn't any good, you know, last year against Oakland, like you said, against New Orleans, against Tampa, some of those better run defenses, you were hovering way too close to 3 yards per carry. I'm not expecting you to be 4.5 or 5 against those teams, but can you be 4? You know, something like that, to where your biggest strength as an offense, you can continue to rely on that and, you know, try to play keep away against some of these explosive offenses. So I think that's the next step. I really like Jonathan Taylor. And, you know, obviously he gives you that home run element. I see more of the 4.3 speed than I do the 226 pounds, but I think he checks a lot of boxes for you, and he's got to be an immediate impact guy. I know for rookies, that's a lot of pressure, but if you're going to draft a running back that high, the guy's got to come in and help you out from day one.
All right. Well, that's good insight there from Kevin Bowen, guys. If you're not already following him, please follow him right now, either if it's on YouTube or Twitter, his podcast. It's always great insight. Kevin, thank you so much again for jumping on the show. Thank you for your time, bud. And anything you'd like to say?
No, I just hope everyone can stay safe through all this. And hopefully we can do this again, Michael, before the start of the year.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Well, thank you again. And you have a blessed day, Kev.
Yes. You do the same. Thanks for having me on.